Hello, and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Monday, December 13th. Coming up on today's show, we check in with Mount Allison Vice President Ann Comfort about the university's plan for classrooms and campus rules in January, and we hear about a new foundation funded by a Sackville-based environmental services co-op, the Astor Group. But first, some more local news and information. Tantramar Region students who take one of three school buses are being asked to stay at home Monday due to a positive COVID situation. Principals from local schools alerted families Sunday night that buses 212, 214, and 215 would not be running Monday, and any students who take those buses should stay home and await further instruction from their school administration. Over at the Port Elgin Regional School, all students will be home today as the school goes into an operational day. Staff will report to the school. And because local COVID news seems to come in threes, Public Health has added a new potential public exposure to its list located in Sackville. Anyone who is at the McDonald's on Main Street on Sunday, November 28th, between 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. should be monitoring for symptoms. If symptoms develop, Public Health recommends making an appointment for a PCR lab test as soon as possible. Anyone fully vaccinated does not need to isolate while awaiting results, but anyone not fully vaccinated must do so. People without symptoms can use a point of care or rapid test being distributed by Horizon in Sackville on Tuesday at the Civic Center from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. or until supplies run out. Over the weekend, New Brunswick reported 238 new cases of COVID-19, with 56 of those cases in Zone 1. 41 of Zone 1's new cases are under investigation. The active case count is now over 1,000 province-wide, with 184 active cases in Zone 1. The Sackville Hospital emergency room was closed unexpectedly on Saturday afternoon due to a sudden unavailability of physician and nurse coverage. The ER is currently on reduced hours, open from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., 7 days a week, but Horizon Health Network announced the early closure on Saturday at about 1:30 p.m. Sackville Town Council meets tonight at 7 p.m. for its regular monthly council meeting and its last meeting of 2021. Council will be asked to authorize the purchase of kayaks for a rental program at Silver Lake and new bunker gear for the fire department. Staff are also asking for approval of a street closure for fireworks during Winterfest, which is slated for February 10th to 13th. Council will also appoint 10 members to the Climate Change Advisory Committee, the next incarnation of the Mayor's Roundtable on Climate Change. The committee's purpose is to embed climate change review and action within council and staff's decision-making. Council will also have second and third reading of a new flyer distribution bylaw, which would make it an infraction to deliver flyers to a home with a no-flyers sign and require flyers to be delivered to front steps instead of being placed in driveways. Town Council meets at 7 p.m. tonight. To attend in person, contact Town Clerk Donna Beale. Otherwise, you can catch the live stream on YouTube or join via Microsoft Teams. Mount Allison students finished classes last week and started their winter exam period due to wind down this Saturday, December 18th. They will return to start their winter term on January 10th, and things will be a little different. Mount Allison recently announced its plans for January, and they include a return to regular capacity in the university's classrooms. I called up Mount Allison's Vice President of International and Student Affairs, Ann Comfort, to find out more about the university's plan. Ann Comfort, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
So Mount Allison has announced plans to return to its full pre-pandemic classroom capacities in January. Tell us a bit about what made you comfortable making that move to go back to full classroom capacity.
So just off the top, it's not something that was new, Erica. So earlier in the summer, we determined what our plans would be for 21-22. And, you know, that was making sure that in the fall that we moved to 1 meter distancing in classes and that we had more in-person components One of the things we know about COVID since its arrival is that it's really unpredictable, and we know that that's expected to continue, but that we hope that by putting, you know, managing and mitigating some of the impacts, that we could start to return to a place where people were feeling more comfortable. So the plan all along for this year was that in the winter semester, we would return to regular room occupancy. With that, though, you know, I want people to really understand that, you know, if we need to make changes, then we're going to be prepared to implement those. But some of the guidelines that we're still going to have in place for winter semester, even though we're going to have regular room capacity, is we're going to continue to focus on being vaccinated. So right now on campus, we have a 98% vaccination rate. We're going to continue with mask wearing, and especially in classrooms. And we are seeing a high compliance with that among our students when you're going into our classrooms. There are going to be guidelines for in-person events on campus. So those include, you know, although we have a very small number of people that are unvaccinated, if you're attending a speaker series or a play, for example, you have to be vaccinated and masked in order to attend those. And, you know, the concern around staying home if you're not feeling well continues. We're seeing faculty and students that are working together to make sure that that's happening. So the days of students showing up sick to class aren't happening. And, you know, the other thing that we've been able to add to what we're doing is around the availability of the rapid test kits. So those are another measure that help our students and faculty and staff to feel more secure in being together in classrooms.
Thanks for that, Anne. I wanted to ask a bit about that. You mentioned the 98% level of vaccination. Is that among students or staff or both?
So overall, when we average out students, faculty, and staff, the rate is 98%. For students alone, it's 98.8%.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite good.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. When the Matsu teamed up with us in the summer to push out vaccination, they had a number of social media campaigns, and our students really understood that this was part of what they needed to do to help keep everybody safe on campus. So that's a very high compliance rate compared to some of our post-secondary partners in New Brunswick.
Mm-hmm. And so that would leave just a small number of people who are, instead of being vaccinated, getting tested regularly. Do you have any idea about how many people that would be among staff and students?
It's probably somewhere between 40 and 50. I don't have the exact number, but if if we do the math, that's probably what it comes down to. Okay. And the regular testing started in mid-October, and we see that continuing right through the winter semester as well. We have some individuals that because we started the testing, just made the choice to be vaccinated. And some of those over December break might choose that they'd rather not continue to be tested and will choose to be vaccinated as well. So we keep hoping that we can move that dial even further than the 98.8%.
Now, Monet has its own. We know in Sackville we've been able to pick up rapid test kits every Tuesday or most Tuesdays. Mount A has its own supply that you're distributing to staff and students at the moment, and they've become sort of freely distributed, I gather?
Yes, they have. So you're right, at the Civic Center, the province is distributing them again today. I noticed the sign when I drove by. Mount A was given 1,000 rapid test kits. We had one day where people could come and pick them up at the pond, and then the ones that have remained, they're available either at the MASU or the Wellness Center during office hours, and faculty, staff, or students can go and pick those up. And they're seen, you know, nationwide, they're seen as an important measure that people can take for their own peace of mind. And it's something, you know, that people should probably do on a regular basis. So I do it, you know, once a week. I'll take a rapid test just to reassure myself that, no, I haven't picked something up somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And will that continue in January? Do you know? I guess that's sort of up to the province in a way, isn't it?
Well, it's up to the province, although we've been told that if we manage to give out all of the rapid test kits that they've given us, that there are more that we can ask for. The province in New Brunswick didn't start distributing the rapid test kits as early as some other provinces, so I believe that there is still an availability, and that's certainly what we have been led to believe. So I think in the winter semester, we will have those, and you know, I hope that the students on campus all go and pick one up so that they have it and that they can test themselves regularly.
Now, there have just been a handful of cases associated with Mount-A over the course of the whole pandemic so far. So it does seem that the measures in place have certainly prevented those cases from becoming outbreaks. Like the measures have been working, I guess. Now, to make these changes and to slowly, there was some changes made in going from 2 meter to 1 meter spacing in this fall, and to make this further step in January. I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about what's the sort of benefit side of that decision. There's a tiny amount of risk, or I mean, who knows what the amount of risk is to continue to sort of return to normal operations, especially when we, you know, have variants still coming around and that sort of thing. But maybe talk a bit about what the benefit side is of returning to normal class capacities and just inching along back to sort of pre-pandemic operations.
Sure. I think one of the benefits, certainly students will tell you, some of our classes, because they had 1 meter distancing, there were limited number of seats available in those classes. So I think a student would say, you know, they may have a better chance now of getting into some of those classes because now there are more seats available. It certainly allows for more social interaction among our students. I think our students are, like I say, have done everything we've asked them to do. And I think they're ready to be able to go back to that capacity where, you know, you can have more engaged conversations in classrooms, certainly. I think they realize that we are going to be, COVID is going to be unpredictable. There are going to be a lot of ups and downs. They know that we will change. We will get a class tested if we need to. We will go online if we need to. We'll make the changes that we need to if things come up. But in the meantime, I think there is a willingness to go back to as much as, you know, pre-COVID state as we can.
Okay. All right, Anne. And before I let you go, I would definitely be remiss not to ask you about the current state of affairs with Sackville's Hospital and what Matt Allison's administration is thinking and feeling about the future of the hospital and how that affects the school. Can you comment on that a bit?
So certainly we're deeply concerned about the situation at the hospital. I sit on the Rural Health Action Group. That group is very much engaged and engaging with the town council and Horizon Health. We continue to want to work with the town, Horizon Health, and the Rural Health Action Group. But we know that, you know, working together is what needs to happen, and we need to start to see some change so that we can return to sort of normal operations at the hospital. There was a very engaging town hall meeting last night that I attended. There were representatives from Horizon Health. There's a commitment from them, from Horizon Health, to help find a solution and to return the ER and the hospital to what it was. And I can say that, you know, both the town, the Rural Health Committee and Mount Allison are watching and wanting to work with them, but watching to make sure that that's exactly what happens. We need to have a hospital in this town for our students and the whole community, actually.
That was Anne Comfort, Mount Allison's Vice President of International and Student Affairs, speaking with me last week. A new foundation funded in a unique way has made their first funding announcement, and Sackville's EOS EcoEnergy is the beneficiary. The Astor Foundation is granting $2,000 to EOS to help the organization monitor the green roof on Sackville's Town Hall building, as well as food forests at Port Elgin Regional Dorchester Consolidated, and Tanchamar Regional High Schools. The foundation is funded in part by donations from the Astor Group Environmental Services Co-op, which gives 10% of its profits to the foundation. Several familiar Sackville faces are members of the co-op, which delivers environmental consulting services. Margaret Tooze King, Sabina Dietz, and Eric Tooze King are all Astor members. The new foundation is independent of the co-op. I called up the foundation chair, Raisa Marks, to find out a bit more about the work it will do. Raisa Marks, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So the Astor Foundation is relatively new, and it sounds like an interesting concept. Can you tell us about the Astor Foundation and where it came from and what it does?
Sure. So yes, as you said, it's fairly new. It was just it was formed a few years ago and then just got charitable status this past year. And so we launched, and our goal is to give donations to support strategic high-impact environmental projects that might have difficulty finding funding from government sources or from the larger environmental foundations that don't fund a lot of work in the Maritimes. And so it came out of, the idea came out of a co-op based out of Sackville called the Astor Environmental Services Co-op, who, when they founded in the early 2010s, decided that they wanted to put a portion of their profits towards an environmental foundation. And so from that, they had to create this environmental foundation. And so a few years ago, I joined up with some of the members of that co-op to start work on it. And like I said, we got our charitable status last year and launched this year. So yeah, we just gave our first gift to EOS Eco Energy for a project in the Tanchamar area. And we need to raise money to be able to support more great projects.
Okay, so the members of the co-op aren't necessarily involved directly in making the decisions about where the money that the foundation collects goes. Is that right?
Correct. So the foundation is a separate legal entity. So there is some ties to the Astor Co-op because of this agreement for the funding. And some of the co-op members also sit on the Astor board, but they are two separate legal entities.
Okay. And will the foundation be focusing its investments in the Maritimes?
So our goal is to focus investments from the region that the money comes from, or that the money is given to us from. So at the moment, our only source of income for the foundation is through the Astor Co-op, which is great, but it is a modest amount. And so at the moment, we're turning those funds back over to support projects in the local area. But we do want to increase our fundraising. And so everyone is encouraged to look up astorfoundation.ca and donate. And we will turn that money around to give to high impact environmental projects. And we do aim to give to the regions that the donations come from. So if the donations are all coming from New Brunswick or Nova Scotia or, you know, those provinces, then we'll turn it around back to projects in those provinces. But we don't have a specific geographical scope. So if we start doing fundraising, say, in the prairies or other parts of Canada, then we will aim to give the money back to projects in those areas if that's where donations are coming from.
Tell me a bit about how you sort of can evaluate what a high impact environmental project is, and maybe even a bit about what went into the decision to make EOS one of the first recipients.
Sure. So high impact project. So we're looking for things that have a long term impact. So at the moment, as I said, it's quite modest. Like, our grant to the EOS Eco Energy was only $2,000, and we are hoping to increase that over time. So we're looking for things that where we have good bang for our buck. So we want high impact, so that we can see clear impacts in the community. We're looking for things that that will have some kind of a long-term effect. So not just sort of one-off things, but things that will have either a lasting effect because the community will be able to enjoy that project for years to come, or there will be education going on in the community that will then sort of feed future environmental work. So when we were evaluating the projects for this round, we were looking for that long-term impact, clear deliverables, innovative or unique projects. So we wanted to focus on that. And also there is an aspect, like I said, of looking for things that might not be easily funded through other means. So New Brunswick is great because we do have the provincial government's Environmental Trust Fund, but that is, and they give out, support lots of great projects, and that's one of the reasons that New Brunswick has such a vibrant environmental community. But they don't fund everything, and sometimes they can't fund certain things, you know, that government just wouldn't want to get involved in. So we're trying to sort of fill a gap to fund projects that might have trouble getting funding elsewhere, but are still sort of strategic high impact projects.
Well, Raisa, I mean, it's a small start, but it's a start. And yeah, we wish you luck with the Astor Foundation, and hopefully we'll be hearing from you again soon.
Absolutely. Yes, I hope so too. And like I said, this is the first, our first gift to EOS. Very modest gift, but we do hope to be able to raise more money and support more projects long into the future.
That was Raisa Marks, chair of the Astor Foundation Board of Directors. Astor just made its first donation to EOS Eco Energy of Sackville. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Monday, December 13th. As always, we hope you will get in touch with your comments or questions at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.